remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning, everyone. So this morning, I'm going to talk about Buddha's Parinirvana. In the Buddha's calendar, there are a number of important days, and this is one of them. So in the Japanese calendar, it's called Nehane. And after our after the Dharma talk, we're going to have a short ceremony, which I will describe to you. So, when we say Buddha's Parinirvana, what we're talking about is the death of Buddha. And we take time on this day to stop and express our gratitude for Shakyamuni Buddha's teachings and his life and all that he gave to us. So Buddha lived a long time. He lived to be in his 80s. And, you know, 2,500 years ago, to live in your 80s was a long time. Well past retirement age, right? And he kept teaching until his death. So he never stopped in his commitment, even when he grew old and weak. So there's a sutra that's a very revered sutra, especially in the Pure Land schools, called the Nirvana Sutra. And the Nirvana Sutra at the end quotes Buddha as saying, a good man, we will expand that to good people, okay? Good people, cultivate your minds, be conscientious, and avoid indolence. Now my back hurts, my whole body aches, and I want to lie down like a small infant or someone who is chronically ill. Isn't that sweet? Good people, cultivate your minds, be conscientious, and avoid indolence. Like, don't, you know, pay attention. Now my back hurts, my whole body aches, and I want to lie down like a small infant or someone who is chronically ill. So he then entrusted his the Dharma. And he said, you know, if you want to see me, look at the Dharma. I'm alive in the Dharma, in the teachings. And as the sutra says, he lay down on his right side like someone who is ill. And then after some time, he passed away. Traditionally, it's understood that he died of food poisoning. Mushrooms, pork, something. But isn't that an ordinary death? You know? Just, he got old, he ate some bad food, and he died. So this is tells us something about the nature of our life, right? In particular, it tells us about impermanence. We know it's a fact. In our world, everything changes, right? Nothing's fixed. Even Shakyamuni Buddha grew old, he grew sick, died. In some traditions, as we'll talk about in a minute, Buddha has a larger sense than the historical Buddha. The awakening that's always present. But there's no getting around it. In the early teachings, Buddha dies. So think this touches us, doesn't it? You know, each time I come back to this teaching, I appreciate it in a new way. And this time, I thought, what is it that carried the Buddha for so long? What supported and propelled him in his life? And I think it was great compassion. Right? I mean, when we experience great compassion, when we experience great care, we'll really extend ourselves, won't we? Well, you know, you see someone fall down, you just go pick them up. You don't have all these ideas about whether they deserve it or not. You just respond. This is Buddha's great compassion. I think that this great compassion lies at the heart of the Buddha way. And as we rest in that and touch that, we can encounter the teachings of impermanence. And when the teachings of impermanence touch us, we open up, don't we? You know, we grow kinder, I think. We see others are in the same boat we are. They're not some other kind of creature. They're a creature that gets ill. There's a creature that dies, a creature that loses loved ones, loses many things over the course of our life. So this teaching tells us, okay, how do you want to be in this world? How do you want to be with others? How do you want to be in times where there's struggle and in times that are joyous, where things sometimes go your way and sometimes don't? And sometimes when they don't go your way, you find a hidden gift in that, right? Maybe it opens your heart. Maybe you discover you didn't really need that or want that anyway. We can get so... All right, I want that. That's what I need, right? If I had that, everything would be okay. This is delusion, right, when we're chasing. Do you remember, probably a lot of you are too young, but you remember Pac-Man, those first little games that came out? That's what we can be like chomp, 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 chomp. And we just think, I'm just going to get more and more and more and more and more and more. And then that's our life. Just like chomp, 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 chomp. But if we... Sometimes the teachings of impermanence or being loved or having someone be kind to us, or just we wake up and we say, no, that's not the most important thing. Chomp, 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 chomp. There's something broader. And that something, that way of being, is the awakening that Buddha is teachings are guiding us to. So Buddha is said to have attained nirvana. Have you heard that word, nirvana? Sometimes people think it's endless bliss or a rock and roll band. Perhaps true. What it means is complete awakening. Completely being awake to the way things are. Seeing clearly. And when we see clearly, our hearts open, we're alive, we're connected. So Buddha's death is referred to as parinirvana because he was said to attain nirvana or realize nirvana in his lifetime. So when he died, he passed on into another form of life, so to speak. So Suzuki Roshi said nirvana appeared when Buddha gave up everything. Not when Buddha attained something, but when he gave up everything. So we think of giving up everything as like really grim, right? We can, oh, no. But actually it frees us. It frees us. Not that we should be like, go into austerities. That didn't work for the Buddha. But that we stop the chomp, chomp, chomp. The running after things. Nirvana is liberation. It has the sense to extinguish blindness and delusion. So often the image used is of a flame blown out. A flame blown out. Burning passions and delusions that keep us bound are extinguished. So when I explored this image, what I learned was that in the time of the Buddha, a flame was understood to be an aspect of the atmosphere that burns fitfully until it is released back into the cool spaciousness of the air. So we tend to think, well, there's a flame and then it's blown out, like you got ashes left. But that's not the meaning in the early teachings. The nirvana is the fitful burning blown out and a returning to the spaciousness of our true nature. But I think it's also true, if the flame, this is a very Zen thing, right? If the flame is a part of the atmosphere already, then even fitful burning is a part of the atmosphere, right? So even when we're caught and we're bound, we're still the capacity to be awake. We're still a part of everything. And that's when we remember that. That's very helpful. So the Nirvana, in the Nirvana Sutra, the feeling is that Tathagata, the Buddha, is awakening. So the passing away of Shakyamuni Buddha was not the passing away of awakening. It was a passing away of that particular person who gave his life and walked all over India. There was no Skyping in those days. There were no cars. If he wanted to teach, he walked, and his followers walked with him. And then when it rained, they stayed put. When it's too muddy to walk, they stayed put. So if we can hold both of these things, that the Buddha was a person who gave his life to reduce the suffering of others, and when we refer to Buddha, we're talking about the awakening that exists always, the potential that exists always, that's with us always. When we think about it that way, then these categories don't apply. So we honor the passing of Shakyamuni Buddha. When we do that, we're honoring this life of impermanence. We're honoring this life where we struggle and where we're happy and where we love and where we grieve and all of it. And we also honor that which isn't captured by our ideas about time and thought and all that. Does this make sense? So I saw a painting. If you look up Parinirvana in the on Google or whatever, you'll see these images. And I saw this painting once of the arhats who were the awakened followers of the Buddha at his death. And this image up here, I don't know how well you can see it, but of the reclining Buddha is the Buddha on his deathbed. Right here. So they show the reclining Buddha, and then they show the followers of the Buddha with the most power. powerful expression of grief on their faces. Just, you know. I'll never forget that image. And it was an image of absolute grief, of bereftness, the image of having lost the awakened one, the one who lights the way, and perhaps the way itself. So I think we know that feeling, don't we, as humans? In our lives, when we've lost our way, we've lost a beloved, we lose heart. Are you with me? Mm-hmm. Yeah? But this teaching tells us that if we listen, if we stop and pay attention, we can hear the teachings of the Buddha. We can hear the teachings across the millennia, beyond time and space. And when we stop and pay attention in that way, we are recalled to the truth of our lives. Who we are, how we are. We rediscover, even sometimes in the midst of real terrible pain, we can rediscover gratitude, appreciation, see the small things in our lives that give them meaning. It's such a gorgeous day out today, isn't it? But it's not, this gratitude is not just reserved for gorgeous days like today. You know? This is refuge. This is what we call refuge, taking refuge. Refuge, to fly back. That's what it means. To fly back. To find our home. So we can't know this by putting it in a neat category. File it away, grasp it, all that. But if we listen deeply to the Dharma, the Buddha, awakening, is right there with us. And out of that comes a connection, a desire to care for the world. And in that way we honor Shakyamuni Buddha's teachings and enact them. So I want to read you a short piece to this big fat book. If you have a nice rainy afternoon sometimes, just read this. This is Dogen Zenji. 2,000 years ago today, our original teacher, the Tathagata Shakyamuni, entered nirvana under the Bodhi tree in India in the Saha world, that's our world. Every year when we encounter this day, the branches lower and the leaves become withered, saddened by the Tathagata's passing into nirvana. The sixth ancestor, the ancestral teacher of Huineng, instructed Zen teacher Xiao Dao, saying, "Unsurpassed great nirvana is perfectly bright and always serenely illuminated. Common people think it is death, and those outside the way cling to it as annihilation. Nirvana is neither departing nor entering the world, nor hiding in despair, nor is it birth or extinction, nor coming or going. And yet simply, when the opportunity and conditions join together, parinirvana is manifested. This night, Buddha entered nirvana under the twin Sala trees. And yet it is said that he always abides on Vulture Peak, where he taught. When can we meet our compassionate father? When couldn't we meet our compassionate teacher? Alone and poor, we vainly remain in this world. Although it is like this, his remote descendants, that's us. This thousandfold Saha world, at this very time, what can you say?" After a pause, Dogen said, in Crane Forest, which is where Dogen died, with the moon fallen, awakening fallen, how could dawn appear? In Kusinagara, flowers wither, and the spring is not spring. Amid love and yearning, what can this confused sun do? I wish to stop these red tears and join in wholesome action. Let me read that last part to you. This is Dogen, founder of our school, talking from the heart. In Crane Forest, with the moon fallen, how could dawn appear? In Kusinagara, flowers wither, and spring is not spring. Amid love and yearning, what can this confused sun do? I wish to stop these red tears and join in wholesome action. So he's telling us his sense of bereftness, and he's also telling us, what do we do? Well, we're awake to what we're actually feeling. We're not asleep, you know? We see what our reality is in that moment. And then I awake to wholesome action. What is wholesome action? It's kindness for ourselves, caring for this life, responding to others with compassion, engaging, being alive, being of this world. We enter the world of impermanence with all beings, right? We know ourselves to be of this world, and great compassion flowers. We are enfolded in and supported by and expressive of this great compassion. We enact it. We enact our lives just as we are, not some special other way, right? This is Buddha's activity. This is Buddha becoming real in the world. So, there's another saying by Dogen. Our lives arise and perish with each moment. Their swiftness is like this. Moment after moment, we should not forget this. While being within this swiftness of arising and perishing in each moment, if we arouse one single thought of ferrying others before ourselves, the eternal longevity of the Tathagata of Buddha immediately manifests itself. Our lives arise and perish within each moment. Their swiftness is like this. Moment after moment, we should not forget this. While being within this swiftness of arising and perishing in each moment, if we arouse one single thought of ferrying others before ourselves, the eternal longevity of the Tathagata immediately manifests itself. If we pay attention, if we wake up to impermanence, if we wake up to the nature of our lives, and we throw ourselves in, you know, with all beings. Not hold ourselves back, but throw ourselves in our ordinary life. We say just one thought of being alive in that way. In that one thought, that one action, that one moment, the eternal longevity of the Buddha immediately manifests itself. So we stay close to impermanence, arising and passing away. We stay close to our shared life. When we do that, we see differently. We feel ourselves differently. Maybe we enjoy our lives a little more. I hope so. We hear the teachings. We find our connection to others. Gratitude touches us. And the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha become alive. So this is very simple. It's very down to earth, very practical. It opens us beyond our narrow self-centered view. And allows us to really express the teachings of the Buddha. Just, you know, right here, right in your ordinary life, not someplace else. So it's simple, day by day, ordinary. We sit in meditation, we work. You know, our neighbors, hot water heater, the pilot light blows out because of the wind. We say, do you need help? Right? We talk about this a lot here. This very ordinary way. Somebody's juggling something in the grocery store line, you say, please, go ahead. That is the manifestation of the Buddha. It's not pyrotechnics, even though sometimes you sit and there might be pyrotechnics. There might be, whoa, this is cool. I feel great. Then you get up and somebody has taken your sweater. Somebody took my shoes one time. And the shoes they left were like about half my feet. Like I can't even get my feet in. What do you do then? Has the Buddha come alive then? So it's you know, we have to return again and again to this. And the thing about things that are impermanence is that everything passes, right? That means, you know, the grief transformed. It means crankiness goes away. It means that we are alive to the changing vitality of life. That is Buddhist way.